This is VOA News by remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. The corona pandemic hit a grim milestone Thursday with more than a million confirmed cases worldwide. The count by Johns Hopkins University says about a quarter of them are in the United States. Italy has reported the most fatalities with more than 13,000 and climbing daily. A question on nearly everyone's lips is in the U.S. is, do I need to wear a mask? Some experts have said anyone who is not sick or caring for someone who doesn't need one, they say a mask won't stop the virus. Other experts say even minimal protection from a mask or some type of face covering is better than nothing at all. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio is recommending New Yorkers wear a scarf, bandana, or some homemade covering over their mouths and noses, but not a surgical mask. He says those should be reserved for medical professionals. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti is also asking people to cover their mouths in public. U.S. President Donald Trump says the White House task force is still putting together guidelines on whether to wear a face covering. As a result of the coronavirus, economies around the world have begun to crumble as businesses shut their doors and commerce all but grinds to a halt. In the U.S., 6.6 million Americans filed unemployment claims this week, pushing the two-week jobless total higher than 10 million, shattering records. Economists expect U.S. unemployment figures to skyrocket, but the question is how high and for how long. Experts say the true measure of the economic downturn may not come for months and must be measured against job numbers before the novel coronavirus. U.S. President Trump on Thursday lashed out at Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer, accusing him of being missing on the action during the coronavirus response and for saying incorrect and bites about the administration's handling of the health crisis. This is VOA News. U.S. President Trump said he underwent a second coronavirus test Thursday using a rapid diagnostic that produced a result in less than 15 minutes, and it had determined that he had not been infected. At his daily White House news briefing, Mr. Trump announced plans for the U.S. military and federal personnel to operate a makeshift hospital set up in New York to help the city grapple with a flood of patients. White House senior advisor Jared Kushner, a member of the coronavirus task force, said that the government will send to New York a public hospital system a supply of N95 protective masks to help medical workers get through the next month. Many funeral homes in New York and around the globe are in crisis as they try to meet surging demand amid the coronavirus pandemic. If funeral directors are being squeezed on one side by inundated hospitals trying to offload bodies, and on the other side by the fact that cemeteries and crematoriums are booked for a week at least. The captain of a U.S. Navy aircraft carrier facing a growing outbreak of the coronavirus was fired Thursday by Navy leaders who said he created a panic by sending his memo pleading for help to too many people. The Navy Secretary Thomas Motley said the ship's commander, Navy Captain Brett Crozier, demonstrated extremely poor judgment in the middle of a crisis. He says the captain copied too many people on the memo, which was leaked to a California newspaper and then quickly spread to many news outlets. Recent intelligence suggesting Iranian-backed forces in Iran, I should say in Iraq, are actively plotting to hit U.S. troops. It may have stirred a new war of words between Washington and Tehran on social media, but has done little to shock U.S. defense officials. U.S. President Donald Trump first shared word of the latest intelligence in a tweet Wednesday, warning of a sneak attack. Later, he told White House reporters the intelligence was very good and that Iranian leaders would be wise to heed U.S. warnings. While not commenting on the specific intelligence that led to Mr. Trump's tweet, current and former U.S. officials say the idea Tehran would use proxy forces to lash out at this time would be consistent with the Iranian regime's playbook. Some analysts add that in just the past few weeks alone, Iranian-backed militias have become even bolder, seeking to draw attention to all of their activities. And again, the coronavirus pandemic hit a grim milestone on Thursday with more than 1 million confirmed cases worldwide. That's according to a count by Johns Hopkins University. Right now, they say that Italy has reported the most fatalities at more than 13,000. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Experts say the next few weeks are critical in Africa's fight against the coronavirus.
We project that in the next 3 to 4 weeks, we'll begin to see a clearer picture of where this is taking us to, because we expect that by the 3rd to 4th week from now, the virus will begin to seed into sub-communities.
Rwanda extends its coronavirus lockdown by 15 more days. The number of coronavirus deaths in Kenya rises to 3. Gambian lawmakers refuse to extend coronavirus state of emergency to 90 days. Senegal registered 195 COVID-19 cases. And Malawi's main opposition welcomes the endorsement of a prominent human rights activist.
To us, this is not just a morale booster. It's also a clear indication that our mission as an alliance resonates with the aspirations of the majority of Malawians.
Maurice Mutale is the spokesperson for the opposition Malawi Congress Party. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United States is working with African governments to help them contain the spread of the novel coronavirus in their countries. What happens in the next few weeks in both parts of the world could be critical. Viewer's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The impact of the coronavirus on Africa depends on what happens over the next month, says Dr. Zhang Nkengasong, director of the continent's Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
We project that in the next 3 to 4 weeks, we'll begin to see a clearer picture of where this is taking us to, because we expect that by the 3rd to 4th week from now, the virus will begin to seed into different communities or sub-communities. For example, the most vulnerable populations in slums around capital cities, or even expand to remote areas. So I think we begin to understand how severe this pandemic will be.
And that depends, experts say, on how well residents observe measures meant to control the virus's spread. Lockdowns have been declared around the continent as cases mount, including in South Africa, Botswana, Rwanda, Zimbabwe, Uganda, Mauritius, and some larger cities in Madagascar, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Other countries have imposed travel restrictions and other regulations aimed at stopping the infection from spreading. Dr. Meredith McMorrow, a medical officer in the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Influenza Division, says it is essential that people respect the restrictions.
We have a limited amount of time to prevent widespread circulation of this virus in communities. And so the best thing that we can all do right now is practice good hand hygiene, social distancing, take care of ourselves. I think that the challenge is obviously in areas where good resources are not ever in those areas, then that's where government needs to step in and try and assist people that perhaps can't self-isolate.
The African region, which reported its first case only in February, currently has just over 6,000 reported cases, Nkengasong said. But McMorrow says lags in testing probably mean there are many more cases than have been reported. Dr. Nkengasong notes that even as governments close ranks around their people, this fight is not restricted to one country or even one continent. It's the world, he said, that's in this together. But the doctors hasten to add, keep a safe distance. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Rwanda has extended its coronavirus lockdown by 15 more days to April 19. It was originally scheduled to conclude next Monday, April 6. This comes as Rwandan prosecutors announced on Thursday the release of some prisoners to reduce overcrowding in jails. According to the New Times newspaper of Rwanda, quoting the chief prosecutor, the release does not affect those charged with serious crimes. Rwanda has confirmed 82 cases of the coronavirus. Rwandan Health Minister Dr. Daniel Ungamije says extending the lockdown is necessary to control the spread of the pandemic.
The decision to extend the lockdown for 15 days is really justified. It will help the country to avoid unnecessary risk of having other cluster of COVID patients out of Kigali. For patients who might be released after spending 14 days in the treatment centers, it's true that by the end of this week, we expect to release 2 patients after having 2 consecutive negative tests of COVID as per our protocol. So they will be discharged and rejoin their family in the country.
How many coronavirus cases does Rwanda have? And where do you think these cases originated from? Inside Rwanda or outside of Rwanda?
Today we are with 82 patients with confirmed COVID. They are in different treatment centers that we have in the country. Most of them are from abroad. 81% are from abroad, from different countries. Definitely all continents are represented with patients we have currently treated for COVID.
How come there are Rwandans who do not have a recent travel history but who have tested positive? Do you worry that there could be many more untested cases in Rwanda?
It's true that with those 82 patients, among them we have a certain number, a few number, local people or Rwandese who, without any history of travel, this last 2 weeks or 3 weeks, of course, they have been traced, and we noted that most of them have been in contact with cases from abroad. Because for any case we have from abroad, we do tracing to identify different contacts. And among those contacts, we make three categories. Those who are very close to the case, they are in red zone. And those who are a little bit far from close contact, they are in yellow. And those who really probably that they just share the same building, they are in another cycle. So those in red, we contact actively the process of testing them. And if anyone is positive, we do tracing of contact of that person. So that's why we are able to know who is positive and who has been out of the country and who has been in contact of those from out of the country.
Dr. Daniel Ngamije is Rwanda's health minister. You are speaking with us from the capital, Kigali. Kenya has recorded two more COVID-19 deaths, bringing the number of deceased to three, barely a month after the country recorded its first case. Meanwhile, the number of infected patients has risen to 110. Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe said Thursday that the patients who died were hospitalized in Nairobi and Mombasa, respectively. Marie Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
The number of COVID-19 positive cases in Kenya are increasing at a higher rate, as yesterday the country recorded 29 new cases, bringing the number to 110, hardly a month after the first case was discovered. Speaking in Nairobi, Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe said that the numbers are likely to go high as most Kenyans are not putting into consideration the measures put up by the government.
Out of the 662 samples, 29 people have tested positive to the coronavirus disease. Out of this number, 28 are Kenyans, while one is a Congolese. I seek that you remain calm. I do not wish to scare you. But with the figures I have just read to you, there is no gainsaying that this is a very serious threat to our lives. This number, I must say, is going to rise, and it is going to rise exponentially.
Mr. Kagwe has, however, asked the county government and level 4 hospitals to hire more health workers to help in fighting the pandemic in the country.
Hospitals are all required to continue hiring, and we wish that in the next 7 days, the hospitals too will have hired an additional 1,000 health workers. An additional 6,000 health workers will be in place to help fight against this pandemic.
Steve Omukoko, a COVID-19 positive patient at Kenyatta National Hospital who had traveled to Switzerland via Dubai, felt unwell and tested positive on malaria. But later, doctors advised him to seek COVID-19 tests that eventually turned positive.
When I went to hospital and I was suspicious that I was suffering from malaria, which turned out to be true, but having shared the travel history, the doctors thought it wise to have me tested for COVID-19. So I was taken in an ambulance, brought all the way to Mbagathi where I was tested, and it was discovered that I was positive. My message to Kenyans is that COVID-19 is a reality. It is a disease that we do not want.
The government has ordered all the public transport users to wear face masks while traveling, as inter-county travels are discouraged. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 3rd. There was a heated debate yesterday, Thursday, in the Gambia National Assembly as lawmakers refused to approve a motion by the Justice Minister to extend the country's state of emergency to 90 days. A majority of the lawmakers argue that the 90-day extension will most likely violate human rights and commercial business activities. Pandere Umbaya reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Justice Minister Abubakar Tambedu couldn't convince MPs to approve his motion for an extension of the state of emergency declaration that was made by President Adama Barrow. 36 MPs had voted that Tambedu's request should be reviewed by the House Human Rights and Constitutional Committee before any conclusive decision should be taken. Though 11 MPs had voted for the motion to be approved on the spot. Khalifa Sala is the MP for Serekunda. Sala's request for the minister's motion to be adjourned until Friday was approved by the House.
It would have been important for the president to consult this National Assembly, not now, but before the expiration of the 7 days that was initially declared. That would have been more appropriate. Honorable Speaker, in doing so, emergency powers are based on an act.
Gambia's economy is a tax-based economy, and the MPs are concerned about the economic and human rights ramifications associated with the 90-day shutdown request. The Gambia has so far recorded 4 coronavirus cases. 2 of the patients had recovered and 1 died. Yakuba Jaite is a nominated member of the National Assembly.
I would also want to bring to the attention of the House that these regulations are legal measures would go, if they are to be implemented effectively, have to go hand in hand with the economic measures. I would suggest before we go into the debate, depending on what the standing orders provide, for us to hear from the Minister of Finance itself and Minister of Health, what discussions they have had with the Minister of Justice in the implementation of these regulations.
Jaite also said the House should look into the coronavirus aid monies coming into the country. She said such funds should be properly accounted for. Justice Minister Tambedu has repeatedly called on the lawmakers to be patient.
These are extraordinary times, and the Speaker does have the power to call upon me to intervene by the Constitution. And all I'm trying to do here is to clarify some of the issues raised by the Honourable Member for Sekunda, so that it may assist you in deciding on his motion. The first point that I wish to make, Honourable Speaker, is that the proclamations have been gazetted, and all we need to do is reach out to the Gambia Printing House. Maybe we should have made this available to you, but they have been gazetted.
Meanwhile, there is growing public call for the MPs to reject the Minister's request for an extension of the state of emergency. They said the minister's request was unreasonable. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pan Lurim by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Senegal marked 1 month yesterday, Thursday, since declaring its first known COVID-19 case. The number of cases has climbed to 195, with 55 recovered and 138 still undergoing treatment. Nicolas Moule, Program Manager for Emergency Response and Country Opening at Alima, spoke to Ricky Stryak about Senegal's response to the pandemic.
So right now, all the confirmed cases, even the non-severe cases, we would require an isolation because they are contagious, but they are not sick enough to get an hospitalization. But right now, they are all hospitalized in the COVID treatment unit, which is a good thing because they have to be isolated. But at one point, if we get more severe cases, we would probably have to find a way to manage this patient outside the hospital and to leave the space available, the beds available for the severe cases.
When we talk about isolation, obviously the contact tracing and the contacts of the known cases being in isolation is important. And I've seen that Senegal has... the Ministry of Health has up to now had 2,800 contacts under surveillance, not all at once, obviously. In your impression, how has the country managed the contact tracing aspect?
Well, they have a dedicated team that we call investigation and surveillance team. They identify all the contacts around the confirmed cases. And then they provide follow-up every day. So in the morning, in the evening, it's a phone contact to be sure, I mean, to ask the contact, the person that is contact, if he has any symptom or signs that would require for COVID.
What do you think Senegal has done, perhaps, in regards to the Institut Pasteur especially, and their experience in the Ebola epidemic? Do you think any of that experience applies to this situation? And if so, which aspects?
Yeah, I think it's very important because, so for example, all the coordination system within the Ministry of Health and the Centre des Opérations d'Urgence Sanitaire, sorry, I say it in French, they've been created after Ebola because of this experience. So there are people who know how to manage this kind of outbreak. It's a bit the same for Pasteur Institute. I think they have between 500 to 1,000 test capacity a day, which is a good thing. It's also the same for Alima. We deployed the team that was working previously on the Ebola outbreak in North Kivu. So yeah, definitely having this kind of people are very helpful.
Sorry, did you say that as of now, Senegal has a capacity of testing 500 to 1,000 people a day?
The Pasteur Institute.
That was Nicolas Moulet, Program Manager for Emergency Response and Country Openings at Alima. You're speaking to Ricky Stryak from Senegal's capital, Dakar. The main opposition Malawi Congress Party says it welcomes the decision of a prominent human rights activist to endorse the opposition ahead of the upcoming July 2 presidential election rerun. The endorsement was made by Timothy Mtambo, the former leader of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition. The opposition party alliance says it looks forward to working with the activists to defeat incumbent President Arthur Peter Mutharika in the upcoming poll. Maurice Muntale, the spokesperson for the Malawi Congress Party, tells viewers Peter Clotty that despite criticism, political activist Timothy Mtambo exercised his constitutional rights, which allow him to endorse anyone in the run-up to the election.
We also know at the same time that endorsements of this nature are not peculiar to Malawi, nor are they peculiar to Timothy Mtambo himself. These endorsements happen everywhere, especially when it is time for an election. People sit down, analyze the type of leaders that they have and the ideas that certain political parties have or even alliances, and then they sit down to make a decision of that nature. So we want to believe that Timothy Mtambo made this decision after analyzing the leadership in the alliance, and then he came up to endorse the alliance. To us, this is not just a morale booster. It's also a clear indication that our mission as an alliance resonates with the aspirations of the majority of Malawians. So we want to salute what Mtambo has done. We want to thank him for having analyzed where to go and which institution or organization to endorse. And here we are working hand in hand with him from here onward.
What does this endorsement do for the MCP ahead of the election scheduled for July?
Everybody in this country knows exactly what Mtambo is able to do, the support that he's commanding, and what he's championing, what he's fighting for. And because what he's fighting for is what exactly the alliance is wanting to achieve, this means that now we have concerted effort. We are going to be working together to kick DPP government out, and then we take the reins of power. So what it means to us is that we are now having many voices put together, all efforts put together, and that this guarantees us a victory come next fresh election.
Maurice, some supporters of the government are saying that they have known that Timothy Mtambo has been masquerading as an activist, but he is a politician. And his endorsement of your alliance is a strong indication of their suspicion, which they have been speaking about for a long time, that he is just a politician trying to pretend as if he's an activist. So you are in cahoot with him just to destabilize the country. So you make the government unpopular just to win political power. Your reaction to that?
Timothy Mtambo is not pretending, and none of us is wanting to pretend anything. When he was chairman of the HRDC, what he was advocating for was political in nature. Nobody can deny that, unless somebody doesn't know what politics is all about. He's only saying, under HRDC, I was limited. I couldn't endorse anybody else, any political party, any political leader. So if they just want to speculate, let them not just speculate. He was doing politics because he was wanting to free Malawians from the agonies that they are passing through now, from bad leadership.
Maurice Mutale is spokesperson for the opposition Malawi Congress Party. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotte from the capital, Lilongwe. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with news that Football World Governing Body FIFA President Gianni Infantino admitted on Thursday that nobody knows when football can resume around the world and that when it returned, it was going to be different. He said that because of the deadly coronavirus pandemic, for once, football is not the most important thing. He added that it was time to reform a sport where fixture lists have become overloaded and financial resources increasingly concentrated in the hands of a few elite clubs. Like most other sports, football across the world has been largely halted by the coronavirus pandemic. In Ghana, Black Stars coach Charles Okuno has promised to reward local players with call-ups if they demonstrate top-level performance consistently. According to Charles Okuno, he has noticed that the local players are unable to produce their best for three consecutive games, and that is a worry for him as he intends to give them the chance to feature in the national team.
We'll give them a chance, we'll encourage them. You know, even I had plans before, or we assemble the team to have a psychologist to talk to them before, you know, they join the camp. And so the challenge is up to them.
The Blasters coach was appointed in January, replacing Kwesi Appiah, who had been in charge for 2.5 years. In his first squad announcement, he included 4 Ghana Premier League players. International Olympic Committee President Dr. Thomas Bach has commended the Nigerian Olympic Committee athletes for creating awareness on the COVID-19 pandemic. Bach revealed that the initiative using the voice of Nigerian athletes was the first by any country, while he encouraged other NOCs to emulate Nigeria. The video of the Nigerian athletes' message was used on social media platforms by Athlete 365 and the Olympic Channel. Dr. Bach, responding to Nigerian representative Olumide Oyedeji during the virtual conference, said Nigerian athletes will continue to enjoy scholarship grants with further windows available for new ones. The Kenyan Rugby League is already dreaming of taking the team to the 2025 Rugby League World Cup a month after the first tournament was played in Nairobi. KRL Chairman Richard Nyakwakwa said plans were underway for an international test match series against South Africa and Spain in September this year in Nairobi before the novel coronavirus interrupted the schedule. Nyakwakwa noted that it is not too early to face continental powerhouse South Africa, who last took part at the Rugby League World Cup in 2000, if they really want to achieve their target. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
That's it for this Friday, April 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the deadly coronavirus is spreading across Africa, causing anxiety and fear. Join me, Linor Moudou, and a panel of experts to answer your questions about COVID-19 and to distinguish myth from fact on a special edition of Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.